Welcome to the HM Pod, where your daily look at the Hacker News front page.
That's us.
Today's Tuesday, May 6, 2025. This is number 26 of our deep dives.
26 already. Time flies.
It really does. Today, we've got, well, quite a mix. We're looking at AI headaches, AI potential, a bit of 90s nostalgia, and that, you know, that feeling of wanting to fix everything.
Yeah, it's a good spread. We've got discussions stemming from articles on Curl and AI security reports, the Gemini 2.5 Pro preview that show HN for Clippy.
Oh, yeah.
Clippy. Sneakers 4K remaster, which is cool, and that piece on the curse of knowing how.
Right. So where should we start? Maybe with the Curl situation. That seems pretty pressing.
Sounds good. Yeah, the headline, Curl, we still have not seen a valid security report done with AI help. It pretty much sums it up.
So the problem is just a flood of bad reports.
Exactly. Maintainers are getting buried in these low-quality security reports. A lot of them look like they're AI-generated.
Just noise, basically. Makes it hard to find the real vulnerabilities.
That's the core issue. Someone on HN called it slop. How do you filter the genuine signal from, well, AI-generated nonsense? It's a real challenge.
So what are people suggesting? How do you even tackle that?
Well, a few ideas came up in the Hacker News discussion. One was maybe charging a fee to submit a report.
A paywall for bug reports.
Sort of. The idea is even a small cost might deter just automated spamming of low-effort reports.
But wouldn't that block legitimate researchers, too? Especially like independent folks or people in countries where that fee is actually a lot of money.
Exactly the concern. Yeah, someone brought up programmer salaries in Japan as an example. What seems small here might be a real barrier elsewhere.
Okay, so fees are tricky. What else?
Another thought was a deposit system. You pay up front, but you get it back if the report is valid.
Ah, like a security deposit for your security report.
Pretty much. Tries to discourage the bad stuff without penalizing the good. But again, you run into issues. What about anonymity? What about those lower income countries?
Right. Still barriers.
Then there's the idea of reputation systems. Reporters who consistently submit good stuff get prioritized.
Okay, that makes sense. Build trust over time.
But there was skepticism there, too. Does that really fix the underlying problem of people or bots just flooding the system? Maybe not.
So it's like whack-a-mole. Then what? Fight fire with fire.
That came up, too. Using AI to detect the AI-generated reports. Basically, build a better spam filter specifically for these security submissions, classify them, deprioritize them.
An AI arms race for better reports.
Yeah.
Wild.
And adding to the complexity, there's this suspicion, maybe anecdotal, that some companies are paying out bug bounties too easily without really verifying.
Wait, really? Paying for fake bugs?
Well, the example mentioned was this Evil Jinx reporter profile on HackerOne, apparently making thousands. It suggests the incentive structure might be a bit broken in places.
Wow. That really paints a picture of the current internet, doesn't it? Someone made an analogy about asking questions online now versus, say, 2010.
Yeah, I saw that. Back then, maybe too many search results. Now, you risk drowning in confidently wrong AI answers, even on technical sites.
It's a different kind of information overload.
Yeah.
More misleading.
And you see this pressure in companies, too, right? To use LLMs everywhere for efficiency, even where deep expertise is crucial, like security.
Yeah, the push is real. Which leads to stories like the one about someone checking in hallucinated code.
And blaming ChatGPT.
Yeah. That's not great for accountability.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder about that comment. Are tech leads just becoming front ends for LLMs?
It's a provocative thought. It touches on trust, right? The appeal to authority. But the authority is the LLM, which sounds convincing even when it's wrong.
Because they're optimized to sound plausible. That's the tricky part.
Exactly. Their strength becomes a weakness when you need hard facts.
But it wasn't all negative, right? Some people see value in using LLM.
Oh, for sure. Some argued it shows curiosity. And sometimes an LLM can give you a better starting point than digging through old forum posts.
So it's about critical thinking. Always. Verify, verify, verify.
Pretty much, especially with AI-generated stuff in critical areas.
Okay, let's switch gears to Gemini 2.5 Pro. Huge buzz around that one, especially for coding.
Yeah, big discussion. The main claim attracting attention is that it supposedly hallucinates API calls way less than older models.
That would be a big improvement. That's super frustrating when it just invents code.
Definitely a pain point. But, you know, even if that's better, the consensus seemed to be that these models still aren't great at the big picture stuff. High-level design, architecture, that still seems human.
So good for snippets, maybe less good for designing the whole system?
That's the general feeling. But there's also this growing sense that, okay, for day-to-day tasks, replacing some Google searches, maybe Stack Overflow for common problems, generating boilerplate, they're getting useful.
Useful enough that, well, there was that controversial comment, right, about a company halting hiring.
Oh, yeah. That definitely stirred the pot. Someone claiming their software company stopped hiring is making everyone use these tools and hinted at, you know, needing fewer people down the line.
Wow. That's a bold statement. How did people react?
A lot of skepticism, understandably. Like, okay, LLMs are improving fast, but replacing experienced engineers entirely, especially for complex design, that needs, as someone put it, extraordinary evidence.
Right. Though others did push back, saying don't underestimate the pace of development, reinforcement learning, coding agents getting better.
True, but then you get the counter arguments, the reminders of past hype cycles. Disco stew, Bitcoin to the moon,
right.
You know, keeps in perspective.
Always good advice. And the practical side too, you absolutely have to test anything an AI spits out. Security, stability.
Yeah.
It's not guaranteed just because it runs.
Not at all. And someone made a great point. A lot of software engineering practices like code reviews, clear specs, teamwork, they exist to manage human limitations. It's not obvious LLMs solve those deeper collaboration and understanding problems.
Or the empathy aspect someone mentioned. Understanding the user, the real problem you're solving. LLMs don't feel bad if the software is frustrating.
Good point. And practically, they still struggle with large code bases. Asking an LLM to refactor a big chunk of code can be unpredictable, risky.
There was talk of clusters of agents working together.
Yeah, but how do you make that coherent and deterministic? Big open questions.
We also saw some more aggressive takes, like who needs maintainable code if AI can just rewrite it constantly?
Right. That fits the engineering as a cost center view. Just automate it all, like manufacturing.
But is it like manufacturing? There's that distinction people made between just writing code and deciding how the code should be written, the design part.
Exactly. And how do you even objectively measure good design? It's so context dependent. How can you claim an AI is better when we don't even agree on the definition?
Plus the training data issue. Is it really designing something new or just remixing patterns it saw, like that Helid example?
Yeah, data leakage is a concern for evaluation. On a more down-to-earth level, people shared mixed feelings about using the AI helpers built into AWS or Google Docs. Sometimes helpful, sometimes just wrong.
What about making them better? Any technical ideas?
The language server protocol, LSP, came up. If LLMs could properly use LSP, they'd have a structured understanding of APIs, maybe hallucinate less.
Like giving them the actual rulebook for the code.
Sort of. And IDEs like Cursor or VSCode with Copilot are already using LSP for error checking with the AI. So that integration is happening.
So the pragmatic approach seems to be treat them like smart interns.
That resonated with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Use them for boilerplate, simple functions, tedious stuff. Let humans handle the tricky architecture.
But there's a risk there too, right? If someone doesn't get architecture, they might just rely on the LLM for everything. Vibe coding.
Haha. Vibe coding. I like that. Yeah, that's a potential downside. Building stuff that looks okay on the surface but is fundamentally flawed.
Though, on the flip side, some people said LLMs actually found bugs for them. Surprising stuff.
Yeah, pattern recognition can be powerful. And a basic fix is checking the output against machine-readable specs if you have them. That's a concrete way to verify.
But they still struggle with truly novel solutions, combining things in new ways.
Seems like it. The combinatorial explosion gets too big, which led to that philosophical tangent. Guttle, incompleteness, can human creativity even be fully formalized?
Whoa, deep thoughts from a cozy discussion.
Hacker news for you. Someone else suggested the brain is paraconsistent, handles contradictions better than current AI. Interesting ideas.
Back to the practical. API hallucination is still a thing, though maybe less in 2.5 Pro. Experiences seem to vary a lot between models. GPT, Claude, Gemini.
Definitely inconsistent. Some folks had better luck giving the LLM more context, like feeding it whole research papers or project docs.
Makes sense. More context, better output. But the core design still feels more exploratory than goal-driven.
Yeah, like, let's see what happens, rather than, here's the problem, solve it precisely. Which is why that calculator analogy works. A cheap calculator beats a billion-dollar LLM for basic math accuracy.
And the type of error is different. A typo in docs is one thing, a confidently wrong hallucination is another.
Exactly. Several people said Gemini Pro could give super convincing answers that were just wrong. Need that human verification layer. Always.
Better built-in error checking seems key for the future.
For sure. But overall, you see this huge divide. Some devs find these tools indispensable now. Others are still struggling to get value. Depends on your tech stack, your prompts, your tasks.
Maybe language-specific LLMs are the way forward. Train just on Python or just on JavaScript?
Could be. Though even then, risks remain. Someone shared a story of an LLM introducing a subtle double-free bug. Nasty stuff.
Ouch. One tip was telling the LLM to cite documentation. Ground it in reality.
Good idea, but users still reported it getting confused, mixing up APIs, giving irrelevant info. It's not foolproof.
Yet there were success stories, too. Specific models, specific tools working well together. It's clearly evolving fast.
Definitely. Though limitations pop up in specific areas like complex UI libraries, Shadsing was mentioned, token limits, keeping design consistent. Tricky for LLMs.
Easier with plain HTML CSS, maybe?
Seems that way. And that weird quirk of LLMs adding tons of comments even when you tell them not to. Still happening, apparently.
Where do they do that?
Who knows? Training data artifact, maybe? There was also talk of AST-based prompting focusing on the code structure, which some found better. But again, mixed results, even with Gemini 2.5.
And performance. Some said 2.5 Pro felt worse than older models on their tasks, despite benchmarks.
Yeah, benchmarks aren't everything. Google's TPU advantage might explain their pricing, though. Oh, and people had opinions on the Gemini UI itself, natural.
So of course. So the takeaway on Gemini 2.5 Pro and coding.
Promising, improving, but still very much a tool to be used carefully. Good for assisting, not replacing, skilled engineers. Lots of open source alternatives popping up, too. The impact on jobs. Still a massive debate.
Right. It's not just about code. It's about solving business problems.
Yeah.
Okay, let's completely change the vibe. Sneakers. The 1992 movie, 4K Remaster.
Yes. A very different kind of Hacker News thread. Lots of love for that film.
Total nostalgia trip for many, it seems. It holds up surprisingly well.
In many ways, yeah. The themes, secrets, encryption, hacking culture back then still resonate, even if the tech itself is, you know, ancient. Someone spotted a potential name spelling error in the credits, Len Adelman's name. Minor detail.
But mostly people just appreciate the vibe, the story.
Absolutely. That early 90s hacker aesthetic, someone shared a memory of sneaking into their high school server room. It captured that feeling.
And the characters. Whistler, the blind sound expert. People loved how capable and cool he was.
It's Strathairn, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And the dialogue is just gold. There isn't a government on this planet that wouldn't kill us all for that thing. Still kind of true.
Shows the quality of the script. Apparently a top writer worked on it for ages. Even little things like the computer dating subplot got discussed.
And the judge people by their shoes line generated some fun back and forth. Plus the humor, Cosmos lines. Just great writing.
The discussion also got into the technicals of the 4K transfer. Finding good masters for old films isn't always easy.
Right. Studios haven't always been great at preserving stuff.
Yeah.
That Pink Floyd Live in Pompeii story is heartbreaking. Original negatives just gone.
Wow. And now with HDTVs, you see everything. All the little flaws from the original film makes remastering harder. Sometimes IP rights get in the way, too, like for Brave Little Toaster.
It's wild when a director has to thank someone on YouTube for saving their film. Shows how fragmented preservation can be. TV shows often got erased because they weren't seen as valuable long term.
But people also remembered Sneakers isn't a documentary. It takes liberties for the story. Still, having the editor of 2600 as a consultant adds some cred.
Definitely. There were funny anecdotes, like a real-world voice verification system sounding like something from the movie, and references in the game Uplink.
My voice is my passport.
I
got a line. Used in real systems now, apparently.
Yeah. The film had some foresight. People also liked the visual style, the text reflected in glasses, the tension building without just explosions.
Though some lines feel dated now, like the bit about which countries are friends.
Mm.
You have to remember, it was 1992.
Context is key. Overall, huge appreciation for the writing, acting, and its place in tech culture. Connection to War Games, too. That first phone trunk scene. Classic hacking cinema.
Was there anyone who didn't love it?
One person questioned if it reinforced hacker stereotypes, but the counter was, well, it kind of created some of those stereotypes back then, didn't it? Compared to, say, Tron.
Fair point. Someone called the movie Hackers accidentally great as a spoof.
Yeah. And lots of details shared about the actual 4K Blu-ray release from Kino Lorber. Specs, features, release date.
Dolby Vision, DTS HD Master Audio. Sounds like a proper release.
Yeah. Though one reviewer noted some dated bits, predictable twists, maybe a parody-like ending. But praised the cast and cinematography. And again, Len Adelman consulted, co-inventor of RSA. That's cool. Ratings seemed good overall.
Nice. Okay, last one. This feels very relevant to, well, probably everyone listening. The curse of knowing how, or fixing everything.
Oh man, yes. This one hit home for a lot of people on HN. That feeling of seeing flaws everywhere and wanting to fix them all.
The burden of competence, almost.
Yeah.
You know how it could be better, so it bugs you.
Exactly. The article had that copy, choose, create learning model, but the curse kicks in when you reach the choose and create stages and see imperfections constantly.
Like those UI annoyances, buttons you click by accident, lists that jump around when you try to connect to Bluetooth.
Yes. So many suggestions in the thread for fixing device lists, add to bottom, gray out, resort button. But they all feel like patches. People just want to blacklist, hide the neighbor stuff.
Right. It's the simple things. Contrast that with AirPods just working. That's the dream.
Another pet peeve mentioned, custom domains that just point to Medium. Feels deceptive. People suggested redirectors like Scribe.
And of course, ad blockers. The solution to so much online annoyance. Plus those disruptive pop-ups mid-task.
The timing of UI interactivity, too. That tiny delay matters, prevents failed taps, but too much shift causes mistaps. Notification banners are a prime example.
Layout shift as a dark pattern came up too. Nasty stuff.
On a bigger scale, people discuss the cost of always learning new tech versus mastering what you know. That pressure adds to the curse.
Then there was that weird moment with the LLM-generated wisdom.
Right. Someone posted this thoughtful comment. Turns out it was AI, sparked a whole chat about simulated empathy. Can AI really offer wisdom?
Deep questions again. It makes you value actual lived experience. Someone else just said they code because they like it, which was refreshing.
Yeah. And the difference between solo work and teamwork affects this too. Plus, the idea of just getting started, even if it's imperfect, momentum matters.
Burnout came up a lot, feeling stuck on personal projects. Advice was prioritize, maybe drop some tech hobbies, use tools you know well, make it work, then make it nice.
But that's a trap too, right? The make it nice part often gets deferred forever. Getting code reviews helps break that cycle.
True. Learning is uncomfortable, but it's growth. AI might help learn faster, but iterating on what you know is still solid. Building simple versions of complex things helps understanding too.
Lots of debate around validating ideas before coding, the value of OSS contributions, seeing fake coming soon pages.
And the idea that software doesn't stay solved, dependencies break, hardware changes, quantum computing looms, things decay. That Turbo Pascal patcher story was a cool historical bit.
People felt iOS, macOS, Android braid more often than Windows these days, and the need to accept good enough, especially personally, perfectionism for hobbies or OSS maybe.
Though some felt OSS contributors get exploited. And aging helps you prioritize exploiting knowledge over exploring. Funny takes on getting older.
Yeah, lots of wisdom shared. Rest, finish things, say no, understand your internal narratives, maximizers versus satisficers.
Burnout being about lack of meaning, not just overwork, different from parental burnout and the moral weight on OSS maintainers.
Philosophical questions too. Wanting life to be finished, everything fine, is constantly fixing things a form of disguised
The
superiority?
programming as godhood trope came up again. People seem tired of it.
Understandably, connecting code refactoring urges to personal overwhelm felt very relatable. The 80-20 rule frustration.
LLM hallucinations making people question their own lifelong assumptions. The pull of abstract thinking, building platforms instead of apps.
Dark humor about death not being the end. Mostly, though, people just related deeply, found comfort in shared experience.
Practical tips, structure, habits, design for change. Math debates about cost of change, knowing when you're done.
Humorous welcome to your 30s comments. Remembering dev is often collaborative, needs management. Contrasting with early solo coding joy, long-term perspectives on burnout.
The key takeaway, the hardest thing you'll ever learn is when to leave them broken.
Exactly. Software rewrites happen, hoping for better, but new problems arise. Old corporate boondoggles, steps project, forth, examples of trying for better systems.
Value in implementing things yourself for learning. But distinguishing knowing how to fix from needing to fix everything.
Because fixing can create more problems. Sometimes leaving okay but ugly solutions is the pragmatic path. LM's making it easier to whip up small tools now. Hacking versus standards.
You can do anything except one thing. Computer as a workshop. Burden of seeing flaws. Simple joys like writing static site generators.
Programmers as multipliers, good and bad. Maintainability, boring tech's value. Some expected curse of competence instead. Purpose, honest estimates, help avoid burnout. Fix by deleting.
Deleting is hard, though. Accepting co-iteration, minimalist setups like OpenBSD.
And ending on that programming is godhood feeling again, the urge to remake everything, feeling insane, but loving the rush when it works.
So that's quite the journey through Hacker News today. Mm. AI challenges, Gemini's evolution, a beloved movie getting a new lease on life, and that deep, relatable urge to constantly fix and improve.
A really diverse set of discussions. We covered a lot of ground, from very technical details to almost philosophical points about work and life.
It really makes you think. For you listening, what stuck out the most? Was it the AI debates, the nostalgia, or maybe that feeling of the curse?
Yeah, which threads pulled you in? And maybe a final thought to chew on. As AI keeps advancing and our tech understanding deepens, how do you find that balance between pushing innovation and having the wisdom to sometimes just leave things be?
Something to ponder. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive on the HN Chen Pod. Definitely check out the original Hacker News threads if you want to explore these discussions further. We'll be back with our next Daily Scan.